This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, this is the evening edition. I am Uma Paganampake Bagan, and I'm going to be talking movies today, and with two very, very special guests. I've got Greg Coote, one of Australia's film pioneers. His extensive media-heavy resume includes stints as joint managing director of Roadshow Distributors, executive vice president of Columbia Pictures. He was also chairman and chief executive officer of Dune Entertainment, which financed a significant stake in James Cameron's Avatar, the highest-grossing movie of all time. Also here, Leon Tan, Tripod Entertainment, the man behind Malaysia's award-winning 3D animated film, War of the Worlds, Goliath. I loved it. Welcome to the show, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Greg, very quickly, I've been dying to ask you this for a long time. You got to talk to me about Avatar. You guys stumped about 60% of Avatar's production cost. Did you have any clue at the time that it would do what it did?
Well, Uma, I'm not going to tell you how much we contributed to the budget. Otherwise, somebody is going to cut my tongue out. did we have any clue as to what it would ultimately do? There are some people, you know, that success has a lot of fathers. And there are some people who will tell you that they did. But I never met them. Not at the time, in any case.
Right.
No. Look, I think that the last time we looked, the gross of the picture was over $3 billion.
That's right.
That was never predicted, ever, by anybody.
Right. And what has it been like since, in the sense that movies like Avatar, once in a generation thing, are studios constantly on the lookout for the next big monster? Is that what everybody wants?
Yes. Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, Jim Cameron is not prolific. He's almost infallible. That's the director of the picture.
Yeah.
He makes a movie about every 10 years. So you're right. The next Avatar you might see in the next generation, but I think he's got a start date sometime in 2015, he's going to do two and three together.
That's right.
Or back to back. I'm lucky in my life and my career, I've been associated with two blockbuster series. One is Avatar and the other is The Matrix. They probably come along once in a lifetime, and luckily I had two.
All right. Leon, what has life been like since and because of War of the Worlds Goliath?
Well, War of the Worlds Goliath have, since we last spoke, it was released in Malaysia and it did the festival circuit, and it's going through international sales. I'm happy to report that B-Sky B picked it up for the UK, which is the spiritual home for War of the Worlds, as you know. And first quarter next year, you'll see War of the Worlds Goliath in DVD, VOD, and selected theatrical in the United States. So very happy to see that it's gone through a fruitful journey.
Right. And what was the critical response like in Malaysia? Because I've read the reviews online overseas, and they were very positive. People loved the film. They enjoyed the 3D stereoscopic stuff. At home, did you get the response you wanted?
I think Malaysians are our own worst critics sometimes, you know. So I guess when a Malaysian film has ambitions to go overseas, generally everybody will scrutinize it. So there will be a group that will scrutinize it that way. And that's a fair point, frankly. And then there are those who are very supportive of what we did and liked what we did, and I'm told were inspired and encouraged, and they want to go out and go and make films themselves, seeing that some of us can do it. And I've never made it a secret, you know. I always tell people, look, if guys like us can do it, I'm sure all of you can do it, you know.
Right.
It's just a matter of putting it all together and seeing it through.
Well, I guess, and there's something I wanted to ask the both of you, because I guess it was very interesting, because the War of the Worlds model was, I guess, quite different to the other Malaysian-made movie models, where usually we make movies for the local market, and then we try and sell it to Europe and the festival circuits and so on and so forth. But with War of the Worlds, you made a very, let me call it, a culturally secular film. Right. It was right from the offset, it was a movie to cater for the global market.
Yep.
Right. It just so happened that a whole bunch of you were Malaysian.
Yeah. When we worked together as an international crew on War of the Worlds, I don't think anyone drew the line with saying, oh, we're Malaysian. and you are, you know, Korean or American or right. whatever. So it was more like we just loved making this show. You know, we wanted to make, all of us grew up, I guess, on some kind of science fiction reference, and they were common. So we wanted to make it, and we thought that there would be an audience who would like exactly what we like, and we make a film like that, you know. Right. So it really was that kind of drive. And of course, very quickly, the realities of commercialization and raising money and insurance and what have you, you know, that grounds us, I guess. That makes the makes the film more of a, then it becomes a business proposition.
It becomes a business proposition,
and
right?
off you yeah. go. And then you try to marry the two, you know, balance both creative and corporate, and make a film like that.
And Greg, is that, are we too caught up in that? Are we too caught up in it being Malaysian movies and Australian movies? And, you know, is that, does that get in the way?
Yeah, I think it does. Umar, I should remind your audience, or remind you, that actually, yes, I am Australian, but I've lived in the States for 30 years.
That's right.
It's really interesting. I can't speak about Malaysian movies. I can speak about Australian films, and they get reviewed in another category. I think with more perception, perhaps, than the similar product from somewhere else. The interesting thing about working in the States is that they don't care. The Americans are enormously either completely not interested or generous about it, because they just look at it as a movie. It's just a movie. Where did it come from? We don't know. But we liked it. Yeah, if you liked it. And I mean, they might eventually say it's Australian or it's Malaysian, but it won't be the headline, and they won't really be interested in it. And I think if Malaysia is caught up in this period of its growth in the world of filmed entertainment, I think that's understandable, because it's new to you. And there'll be, I don't know, let's say in a good year, there'll probably be 6 or 7 movies or something like that. And I think they'll be under enormous scrutiny. So everybody in the business better man up and do their job properly.
Fantastic. Both Greg and Leon are going to be undertaking a new filmmaking venture. We will be talking about that right after this. More music coming your way on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, this is the Evening Edition. I'm Uma Pagan, I'm PK Pagan, and we're talking movies today. We've got Greg Coote with us, one of Australia's film pioneers, as well as Leon Tan of Tripod Entertainment. Gentlemen, you will be embarking on a new journey together. You're going to be setting up a film partnership called Dragon Slate. Tell me about that.
Well, I can tell you that I've done it before, and it's one of the most exciting things you can ever do. Australia really had a very old film business, and I think had some, maybe the first or second talkie or something like that, but it disappeared, and then we bought it back in the 80s, and it was terribly exciting. It was really it was a esprit de corps that existed that doesn't exist as soon as you become cynical and well paid. When you're all, you know, pulling together and getting a movie written, produced, financed, and finally distributed, it's a proud moment when you see it up there on a screen.
And is that what that's like over here, Greg? I mean, the sense of are people less jaded?
Oh, very much so. You know, I was in Singapore last week, and they have a film called Ilo Ilo.
That's right. It's got great critical acclaim.
Yeah, you know, won a prize in Cannes, won a prize in Venice. Is there, obviously, their Academy Award nominee. They feel very, very good about it. And so they should, you know. Fully funded by the government. And the young director just got, a Hollywood agent flew down last week while I was there to sign him, which means his career's launched. And I think there's tremendous enthusiasm and energy going into the business here in places like Singapore, but here especially. Here's sort of amazing. It's the talk of the world, and I mean that. I'm not kidding. I was in Melbourne last week, at an Australian Screen Producers Association meeting, and everybody was talking about Malaysia and the facility and the fact that, you know, I mean, making a movie, there's cliches like, if it's not on the page, it's not on the screen, and all that. And you've got to have a director and actors and everything. You also have to have a budget. And right now, Australia's too expensive to shoot in. The dollar's crazy, and the cost of living down there is crazy. And what you have in Malaysia right now is a very affordable marketplace. So you've just put together a piece of fabulous infrastructure in Pinewood. You're putting together, as I understand it, good people in terms of bringing talent into the country to leave behind some of their skills. I think this is a really exciting time. And Leon and I got together last year, and I looked at his movie and thought, this is a guy that knows what he's doing. And I like working here. I sit on boards in India and China and Singapore and Australia. This is an enormous growth region.
Right.
It's not only an opportunity to make movies at a price, it's also, for me, really exciting to be a part of it.
Right. Leon, I guess, I'm sure this is all growth from catching the bug from War of the Worlds. However, Dragon Slate is all about live action, which is very, very different from animation. I mean, War of the Worlds is, what, 3-5 years in the making? Something like that, And of course, you don't have that kind of crazy freedom with live action, do you? I mean, you can't just add a zeppelin at the last minute.
Well, we just might. Who knows? If Greg lets me. But I think it's before we look at live action or animation, even as we entered into the filmmaking world, even before War of the Worlds Goliath, we just want to tell good stories, you know, and we set the bar quite high to tell universal stories, so much so that it doesn't matter whether you're Malaysian or not. You just want to tell stories and connect with audiences worldwide. So the idea of Dragon Slate was driven by that, in a way. And it's also driven by, you have Pinewood, you've got good infrastructure being built, you've got rebates being set up, you've got government support through investments and training and so on, and you have very hungry filmmakers in Malaysia. And you have a world-class post-production community, you know, the likes of, you know, ImagineX, Basecamp, and so on. So it's a good, conducive time to have a partnership like Greg and myself, and other partnerships, to start making films for the world here. You know, a combination of international know-how and our own resources and our talent. And the timing is right for a company like Dragon Slate.
Right.
And hopefully you get to see some of our films real soon.
Well, fingers crossed. I'm definitely looking forward to it. But, you know, when it comes to, and we'll talk about, I guess, the importance of rebates and stuff in a little while, but I wanted to ask you about the skill. Mm. Like you said, world-class skill, not just in Malaysia, but, of course, regionally as well. I mean, everything happens in Thailand and Indonesia, sound production, all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. Now, do we have to be thinking in a Southeast Asian scale in that sense? So are we, because we're focused on building Malaysia as this hub, but do we have to think bigger? Because none of these countries individually seem to have the kind of critical mass that's required.
Right. I think it'll be driven by the projects.
Right.
I mean, Greg may have a different view, but if a project, before we think about national development, I guess we look at a project, and if a project demands a certain set of skills, naturally we start looking at home first, because it'll be more convenient and logistically makes more sense, and we all know each other culturally. So then we start looking at the gaps. Then we start spreading out, right? Where can we get in the region? If we can't, then we got to spread the net a little wider. And that's really how we're going to do this, I think. It's just the logical way, you know?
Right.
We'll try not to shoehorn, something that doesn't fit, I guess.
Right. We've got to take a quick break for the news. But after this, I'll be asking Greg about rebates and just how important they are to attract talent and filmmakers into the country. You're listening to The Evening Edition on BFM 89.9. Good evening. I'm Uma Paganampake Pagan, and we're talking movies today. I'm speaking to Greg Coote, one of Australia's film pioneers. He was managing director of Roadshow Distributors, executive vice president of Columbia Pictures. He was also chief executive officer and chairman of Dune Entertainment, which has financed great, great films. Also with me, Leon Than of Tripod Entertainment, man behind War of the Worlds, Goliath, Malaysia's first 3D award-winning film. We were talking about making movies, and we mentioned rebates. So, Greg, Malaysia is offering these massive rebates for both local filmmakers and international filmmakers to attract, I guess, talent to Malaysia as a destination for film. In your opinion, how important are these rebates?
Oh, you will not have a film business here without the rebates.
Right.
The rebates, and by the way, it's a good rebate. It's 30%. It appears to have very few strings attached to it. It includes television. I think it's bright. But it's 10% under Australia. 10% is a lot. It's big, you know.
Especially if your movie costs $100 million.
Absolutely, yeah. So it's big, but massive it ain't, you know. But it's good. And you can work with it. Because the cost on the ground here is much cheaper than, let's say, Australia. Okay, Australia has a 40% rebate. But its cost is terrible. So it probably wipes out that 10%, easily wipes out that 10%. You know, you can go to New Zealand, you can go to Ireland, you can go to Bulgaria. Everybody gives you back something, you know. And the a movie company, a studio, or any production company will not move out of their suburb unless you give them something back, whether it be a tax break or a real rebate. So you just don't have a business here if you don't have a rebate.
Right.
And, you know, sad but true, the movie business, while its artistic inclinations are strong, the fact is you got to put the budget together, you got to put the movie together, otherwise you don't have a movie.
Absolutely. I mean, the money talks. But of course, for it to work, I'm assuming this has to be serious long-term rebates. I mean, we're not talking just a year on or 2 years
on.
Oh,
yeah. If a government starts to, change a government, oh, no, that rebate's gone, that's terrible. You know, the Australians just had a change of government, as you know. During the election propagandizing, everybody assured everybody that the rebates would stay in place, irrespective of who won. And otherwise, you can't plan a movie. You know, because you start planning these things years out, and you think about where you're going to make it, and you think about how you're planning it, you better have certainty, otherwise it's impossible.
Right. Leon, what do you see as the potential spillover effects? I mean, there's a lot of huge head in the clouds talk of, you know, in 5 years with the rebates, we might go down the way of Vancouver, you know, suddenly Malaysia would start producing these world-class productions. But surely there's more to it than just getting, I guess, because Hollywood's looking, the circus coming to town is looking for a cheap destination at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Right? And it's the bottom line for them. So how do we tap into that and exploit that?
Well, I think that if you don't have a rebate structure or something like that, it's very hard for the, no matter how hungry a Malaysian filmmaker or producer or entrepreneur in films, it's very hard to get anyone's attention. So the rebates give you a leg up. Right. It also, and I also like the way the rebates are currently structured, where you have to hit a certain threshold to be eligible for the rebates. That means you have to step up your game, and you step up the game not just to get your rebates, but actually to attract an international producer who wants your quality to be of a certain standard anyway. So it's good, I think, for it encourages and incentivizes the Malaysian producers, you know, producer community to step up their game, basically, and understand that this will get them into the international playing field. Now, at the end of the day, you can say that yes, there is a somewhat, you know, maybe opportunistic viewpoint from those coming into Malaysia, but we, in the end, I think, will benefit from the knowledge transfer, from the partnerships, from understanding how they work and applying it for our own films, for eventually making films, like in the case of Australia. Now you have Australian films that travel. and travel pretty well.
Yes, of course.
So someday Malaysian films traveling very well will be the norm. And that's what we dream of as a community of filmmakers in Malaysia, as an industry. We want a real industry.
Right. And of course, I guess the more of these productions come in, it means we will have more locally based equipment and stuff. Like, we don't have to bring in things from Indonesia. And
I guess so. But
which means
I think
we have access to, you know,
it's not
cooler
just,
things to
but
use.
It's not just stuff. Can you imagine, say, a former ILM guy starts to live here because he gets a lot of work.
Right, yeah.
You know, and then he teaches 10 people, and they teach 10 people, you know? And that's just visual effects. What about things you and I take for granted, like makeup, like a hair, like wardrobe, like set building, like helicopter services, you know, all kinds of things. So it spawns this incredible multiplier effect, right?
Right.
And also things that you may not think about, but I suffered for, frankly, like insurance, a specific kind of E&O insurance.
Of course.
Completion bond people. Entertainment lawyers, you know, IP savvy lawyers in this field.
Yeah, because it creates an entirely different industry. I mean, Greg, in Hollywood as well. I mean, I guess Hollywood is so suited for us because it's created this entire world that just does this.
Yeah, but you know, Hollywood can go anywhere. Hollywood's in a suitcase. Hollywood doesn't blink, and if the studio wants you to go to Ireland to make Game of Thrones, you're on the next flight. You know, it's simple, or we'll get somebody else. You know, it's not, there's no two ways about it. The one thing you guys haven't mentioned is the creative process. You've talked a lot about infrastructure, and you can have a wonderful building like Pinewood and Iskandar, but it turns quickly into a tin shed with some smart lights if you do not have the creative community to fill it. Because what goes inside that facility is more important than the facility. So you need writers, you need actors, you need directors. And you have them. I'm not saying you don't, but that is more important than the infrastructure. I mean, it's infrastructure of its own, but it's, you know, the writing has got to be world-class. Otherwise, the movie will not be world-class. Otherwise, the movie will not travel.
Right. And when it comes to that kind of, that's the bonus, right? That's the jackpot, because you've already got the 30% rebate. So that's our plus, isn't it?
Yeah. Also, the plus is that the youth of Malaysia it's culturally exciting to see yourself on the screen. You know, television proves that every day. You know, you have a problem here with the youth of the country perhaps fleeing it a little bit. Well, this is a way to keep them here, you know, because this is a very exciting business to be in. And filmed entertainment, which is not necessarily on a big movie screen, it's on any screen that's in your pocket or on your pad or wherever it may be and where it may be in the future, is an enormous exciting business for a young person to get into. And so culturally, it's important for the country as well.
Fantastic. Gentlemen, what can we expect from Dragonslate? Can you give us a hint? Can you tell us anything?
Well, Dragonslate, as the name suggests, slate really is another way of saying it's a portfolio of projects of filmed entertainment, as Greg would like to call it. Film and television, I guess.
So television as well? Yeah.
We are looking at television, and we are not against any kind of media, but just traditionally we have this knowledge base of film and TV, more film, in fact. And this slate really means that we are looking at, we're developing a bunch of projects right now.
Right.
And they go through a disciplined process that we call the green light process. It has to go through the creative process. It has to tick all the boxes. It's got to have all the right talent attached, and it's got to have money behind it. Once you have all that in a nice box wrapped up in a, you know, pretty paper, then it's greenlit.
So
when it's greenlit, it goes to production.
So if you don't mind me asking, which stage are you at right now? Are you like soliciting scripts and stuff, or have you already got a bucket of stuff that you're looking at?
Yeah, we do have a bucket, and they're in various stages of development. And with any luck, we'll see some films enter principal photography next year.
Very, very cool. Yeah. Greg, one last thing. You sound very excited about Malaysia. And I just wanted you to elaborate on that, because I don't think many people are. So, you know, so maybe some of that might rub off if you could tell us why you're so excited about Malaysia.
I love, you know, I'm an old guy. I like doing new things. And to be in on the, pretty much the ground floor, I mean, there'll be a lot of people who take exception to that, I know. But I think this is a new era, put it that way. And to be invited in to participate in that is very exciting for me, very exciting. That's the kick that I get out of it.
Fantastic. Well, gentlemen, I wish you all the best. Folks, look out for the Dragon Slate logo, possibly on a screen near you very, very soon. You're listening to the Evening Edition on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.